Hey everyone, and welcome to Bad Voltage. Here we are. It's season 3, episode 58. Hope you're all doing very well. I'm here with my compadres, Stuart, Jeffrey, Hinton, Langridge, and of course, Jeremy, Sam, Altman, Garcia.
Now, seems harsh to Jeremy, but I don't know who Jeffrey Hinton is. So is that also harsh to me?
The quote-unquote father of AI is a gentleman who just quit Google to be able to expound on his opinions on AI.
Right. Yes. No, sorry. Yes. I knew the guy. I just hadn't remembered his name.
So the T in GPT, Transformer, he invented Transformers.
Yeah. I knew the guy. Couldn't tell you his name. I watched the BBC interview with him and stuff like that. Because we do preparation, would you believe it?
I know. The godfather of AI. He's going to make you an LLM you can't refuse.
I had a discussion with Chris Coyer the other day, during which I pointed out that I'm quite invested in this because I am, in fact, a large language model. So...
Wow.
Can we name the show Large Language Model?
Now, I thought that would be egotistical, but no, you've suggested it. I'm writing it down.
I think we should 100% call it Large Language Model.
I'm calling them Large Language Models from now on just to see if anyone picks it up.
I was going to be honest with you. Until 10 seconds ago, I was having a bit of a shit day today. So now I feel a lot better thanks to that. Anyway, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about AI. And there's been a lot of hyperbole, or as some people from the past would refer to it as hyperbole.
Yourself, Jonathan Bacon, referred to it in the past.
Did you once say hyperbole?
No, that was Adam Sweet. It wasn't me. I have said hyperbole in the past, though. But he got the flack for it.
It's like the Super Bowl, except loads better.
So there's been a lot of hyperbole about AI. Obviously, a lot of things going on with OpenAI and ChatGPT and Bard and all these different things. But there's a lot of fear about AI. And what we thought we'd do is get into what are these fears about AI and do we think that they're actually valid? So one of those nice specific topics that we tend to cover on Bad Voltage. But why don't you, Mr. Large Language Model, run through some of these fears that people have been
some of the concerns
digging
well.
Into?
So, first of all, before we get into it slightly, the large language model thing is mostly a joke, but I think it's useful to talk about LLMs rather than AI, because it keeps the discussion more focused. One of the concerns, which we're not really going to talk about, is the sci-fi one, about AI takes over and turns the whole world into a machine for making paperclips and grey goo and it just whatever, right? It's not really an interesting discussion because it's not focused, but I think part of that is because everyone has a preconception for what AI is. It's the Star Trek computer, or it's HAL, or whatever. Whereas if we talk about large language models, LLMs, then it's clear that we're talking about a specific technology rather than this sort of general nebulous concept of computers that can think. And it diffuses a lot of the conversation. So I think it's worth talking about LLMs specifically, because that's what we're interested in. So... yep. I put together a relatively, it's not comprehensive, but a relatively detailed list of concerns that people have brought up about this stuff. And I'm interested in your thoughts on each of them. So in no particular order, there's what you might call the free software complaint, where every LLM is built by inhaling a shed load of information and then renting out access to it. And for pretty much all of them, the shed load of information that gets inhaled wasn't owned by the people who did the inhaling. There's a big open question about whether it's reasonable to download the whole internet and shove it into your LLM. And then there's a second question about whether, having done that, whether you can go, this is our proprietary product that you're not allowed access to, but we'll charge you for access to it or whatever. But that's one of the objections, and it's a particularly pointed one in the art world. for reasons that I'd be interested in your thoughts on. But I will point out before we get to that, that the EU are putting together regulation which will require people who create LLMs to declare the copyrighted material that they used in the training corpora, which I think is a really neat solution to this. They're not saying you can't do this, but they're just saying,
yeah,
if you brought in copyright material, which almost everything on Earth is, and almost everything in the LLM models probably is, they have to declare that they did it, which means...
It seems fair.
It seems absolutely fair to me. And
I don't often agree with EU regulation stances, but this one I think is very reasonable.
And and I agree with it for, I think, two reasons, one of which considerably more noble than the other. The noble reason is I think it's good to provide transparency on where the data came from and so on. And this will also require the companies building LLMs to actually give a damn about where they get it from. They can't just go, just set a crawler going and then whatever it pulls back, shove it in. They're going to have to document where they got the information from, when they got it, what permissions they had to it. And that can only be a good thing. And the second thing is, this is the Schadenfreude one, which is not anywhere near as noble. I am enjoying the idea of watching people, huge companies who build LLMs, dancing in between saying, yeah, we used all this copyrighted information and getting beaten to death by Disney, or saying, we're not prepared to declare where we got this information to avoid being beaten to death by Disney, and then getting beaten to death by the EU. So, like I said, not a particularly noble motive, but I think it, like you said, I think it'd be transparent, yes?
Right. All right. So that's one. Do we want to go through these one by one, or do you want to just get them all out first, do you think?
I don't know. What do you think? We can do each other. I mean, are we covered on that one, or have you got lots more thoughts about the source of training material for your LLMs?
That seems uncontroversial to me.
Require them to declare where they got the copyright material.
I suspect OpenAI will disagree with you. I think the three of us will tend to agree on this one, oddly.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
The three of us don't agree on a lot, but I suspect this is one of them.
I think OpenAI, I don't know if they disagree. They wouldn't like to say they agree because they know it's just unilaterally bad for them.
But Altman testified in front of Congress yesterday, said a whole bunch of things that AI should be regulated, that the model should be regulated, et cetera, et cetera. He explicitly avoided this topic, which given the amount of prep I'm sure went into testifying in front of Congress for the first time, him leaving that out was, I imagine, not an oversight.
First
time I've ever seen a tech company ask for more regulation.
That's not true. Look at Sam Bankman-Fried, very famously asked for more crypto regulation while being a total grifter.
That's fair.
And look at how well it worked out for that. Avoiding talking about this particular topic is the reddest of flags, to the point that I'm expecting Jeremy Corbyn to come in singing about it. And and exactly the reason for this is that they know they haven't got a leg to stand on. Right? Well, in my opinion, at least, they haven't got a leg to stand on. So we all agree that people building large language models should have to declare where they got all the data from it. And if they find themselves in a position where they don't want to do that because they'll lose, then they can stop doing that.
Yeah, I mean, there is a related conversation around searchability of information, like how Google handles this with the search engine. But I don't think we want to get into that because it's got nothing to do with AI. Yeah, and it's kind of irrelevant.
Nothing to do with that.
It's kind of related to the topic. Yeah, exactly. So
that's fair. Okay, so the next one is what we might call the automation concern, which is that it puts lots of people out of a job and there's zero provision for what happens to those people.
I don't think I agree with the premise.
Okay.
I think that it will, like many, many things have before, put people out of jobs, but we didn't allow, like the internet put a lot of people out of jobs, but it created even, I think there's a Jevons paradox here, right? So Jevons paradox started with, in the UK, with coal companies being very concerned that when the steam engine came out, it made things so efficient that coal usage was going to go down so much that it was going to put the coal industry out of business. And an economist basically said, this will allow so many more new uses for coal because of the steam engine is so efficient that things we could have never used, you know, weren't possible before are now possible. That in the end, while some jobs will go away because of that, it will create many, many, many more jobs than it reduces. They'll just be different jobs. And I think here, in the end, I think large language models have the opportunity to create more jobs than they make redundant,
yeah,
while definitely making some jobs, to be clear, redundant.
I think I agree with you, Jeremy, on that one. However, I think there is a caveat to this, which is I think it will generate a lot of... There's no doubt that LLMs and just more broadly AI is going to generate a lot of opportunity for different companies. I mean, just look at how many companies are spinning up now, and all those companies are going to be hiring people. A lot of them are going to go out of business, but a lot of these, there's going to be a lot of opportunity. There are going to be many people whose jobs will change or go away. My primary concern about this is that these are all primarily going to be information related jobs, right? IT kind of jobs using computers. And my concern is that if AI makes a bunch of non-information jobs go away, it's going to create a greater demand for people to be savvy when it comes to working with computers and things like that. And there are large swathes of, just look at the US, there's large swathes of the US that really struggle with lack of access to education, adult literacy issues, and things like that. So I think as we move more and more towards online tech, not tech in terms of programming jobs, my worry is whether the educational backstop is going to be able to catch up with it, right?
So like, I think if you're a Ben Thompson fan, he defines the digital age as the era of zero marginal cost, right? And this is really
Who's Ben Thompson?
He writes Techery. He does a whole bunch of things. He's like
a
writer of newsletters. So if you go under the if you like that definition, and I very much do, this is really the third wave of zero marginal costs of the digital age, right? So the PC allowed for zero marginal duplication of information, which was brand new, made a bunch of jobs obsolete, created more jobs. The internet then allowed for zero marginal distribution of information. Again, wiped out a bunch of jobs, created even more.
Yeah.
And I think AI really is about zero marginal generation of information. It's the third evolution of what seems like an inevitable, inexorable march. And I tend to think it will do the same thing, because I don't think this is new. I think this is the internet couldn't have happened without the PC. AI LLMs couldn't have happened without the internet. And I think it's just a progression of zero marginal cost going up one position in the value chain.
Yeah, but I agree. But I do think that with each of these like leaps forward in technology, for all of the opportunity that it creates, there's got to be, I think it creates a greater demand for a societal backbone to support people to get access to that. Like, if you're living in Detroit, you never went to college because you come from a poor background and you never had that opportunity available to you. This world doesn't exist for you. Like, something has got to step in to bring you into it, whether it's a role model or a mentor or whatever it might be. And that's my only real concern about it. So I think both are true. Like, we'll generate more jobs, but it will create a greater demand for education, things like that.
Well said. I kind of agree with Jono here. So I'm now going to explain a thing which I suspect you two probably already know about, but I don't know if everyone listening does. You've heard the term Luddite, right? Do you know what it actually means? So the Luddites,
my uncle.
See, this is exactly the point. The Luddites, the original ones, where the name came from. You know, you have this sort of vague picture in your head of them smashing up spinning jennies and automated looms and stuff like this, right? Because they were taking people's jobs away. But the reason they were doing it wasn't because they were opposed to the technology. They were opposed to the idea that you would take qualified weavers or whatever, take their jobs away and then make no provision for them to do anything else. So exactly the thing the Luddites were concerned about is precisely what Jono's saying, that there wasn't the bigger societal backbone there. Jeremy, as you say, maybe the answer is that it doesn't remove jobs as a big economy picture. It just changed them from one to the other. But first of all, it's not necessarily reasonable that someone who currently has a job that they like and enjoy should be required to move to Silicon Valley and retrain as a fucking JavaScript programmer.
But I guess my broader point is the printing press puts scribes out of business. Like, this isn't an LLM thing. It's not a technology thing. It is inexorable march of history thing. And if you think that's going to stop, like, that's not an LLM conversation. That's
not at all.
I don't think that's what we're saying.
But I think it's also reasonable to say, okay, this is going to mean a shift in the economy, and it's important to see that the people who will be severely affected, negatively affected by that shift in the economy, what are we going to do about that? Now, maybe the answer is we help people retrain, or maybe the answer is that we slow down the march of it, or what? I don't know. But at the moment, a lot of that's not being talked about at all, because it's like, well, progress happens. So turns out you've just been run over by the wheels of the truck of progress, I guess. Sucks to be you.
I think that's just part of a functioning society. Like, did we, I guess I was too young or not born or whatever to know, but like, did we talk about how this was affecting data analysts or data entry people when the computer came around? Like, society changes and society figures it out. And hopefully most of us that don't live, I guess, in the US have a social safety net in a way that we'll get it done.
I don't know whether society does figure it out.
We always have.
I
would say every generation's been slightly better than the previous generation for the last 2000 years. So yeah, I would consider that figuring it out. Are we perfect? No. Do we have a long way to go? Yeah. Generally, am I optimistic that humans figure out the hard problems?
I am. I think this is one of those things.
This could be a whole other show about whether every generation is better than the previous one, because apparently for this generation, it's not true, but different show. But I interrupted you, John. Sorry.
I was going to say, like, one of the things I'm discovering as I get older and hopefully wiser is that I think in so many situations, more than one thing is true at the same time, right? And I think both of these things are true. AI is going to generate loads of jobs, loads of opportunity, lots of businesses, lots of people doing things that they could never do before. And that's going to be amazing. And I don't think we can stop that march towards that. It's going to happen. To Jeremy's point, that's just the way human beings build things and use things. But I think that with anything, especially technological innovation, but other things, some people, quote unquote, get left behind. And I don't like that term, because getting left behind presumes that the onus is on the other person to bring them along. And I don't think it necessarily always has to be. But I think that whenever there's anything new, there's got to be implications around helping people to be able to understand and use it, right? You know, in the same way that even just for us, with our generation, like, I don't know about you, Jeremy, but I'm pretty sure this is the case with Stuart, but like, I never, when I was at school, nobody taught me anything about financial management. Nobody taught me about, oh, here's how you set up a pension, and here's how you can invest in the stock market and compounded interest and stuff like that. That's now a thing that kids are learning about in school, because it's become part and parcel of how people are growing up. Mm-hmm. And I think with this, like, the thing I worry about is, I'm not worried about the people in San Francisco. I'm not worried about any of the people we know. I'm worried about, without picking on Detroit, the people in Detroit who don't have any, like, line into this world. And to me, that might be, oh, it's just about making readily accessible online training available to people and access to broadband, or it could be bringing these skills into schools and community colleges. That's my worry, is that the Silicon Valley area, like, I can't stand, like, how inward facing tech is, like, and it just tends to forget about so many people.
Imagine how those of us that don't live in Silicon Valley feel about that.
Yeah,
exactly.
it's even stronger out here.
Yeah,
it's multiple circles of bullshit. I mean, I was chatting to someone last week about this as well. Like, people outside the US, like, you know, I was at, well, Jeremy, you and I were both at KubeCon in Amsterdam. And when you're European, like, in many cases, you feel like everything's happening in America, right? And it's like, come on. Yeah. So that's my only worry about this. But I think both
I do think to distill the point down a little bit, the importance of solving the digital divide is what they tend to call it when they're talking about trying to have the government fix it. This definitely increases the impact of the digital divide substantially.
Yeah, I would say. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I think both things are true. Like, but we will not stop this march towards all of this happening. Right. I think the three of us are on the same page.
But I think because this is really enabling a lot of different use cases, I don't know that it's going to be as foundational a shift as some people are predicting in the hype. Like if every law firm and every investment bank and every special effects house and all the things that LLMs are good at use LLM to get rid of some of that grunt work, it's not going to make them more profitable or shift what they do. That differential of efficiency gain is just going to get competed away. So they'll do more or they'll do better with the people that they have before they, it's a huge reduction, I would say.
Yeah.
Having worked in a law firm, I don't think I believe you. So to give you a stupid example, firms that tried to adopt things like voice recognition for
Dragon Dictator.
Dragon Dictator, that kind of thing. The explicit goal of all of that was so you could lay off all the secretaries who type letters. Now, maybe, you know, the answer is that's what we should be doing and whatever. But to Jono's point, you go, okay, we're going to lay all those people off. And they go, okay, now I haven't got a job. What job can I get? And you go, well, you can't have anything like the job you've got because that's now all handled by ChatGPT. So these new jobs that we're now creating in the economy, so there's the same amount of jobs, you can get one of those, better join a JavaScript bootcamp, which is not necessarily a victory for the people who are being competed out here. And I think,
true.
This is a concern that a bunch of people have raised. I happen to share it, but this isn't the point. I've tried to list things whether I agree with them or not. But I think that's one that in the excitement towards bringing this in, there's not a lot being said about that other than going, oh, that would be bad. It's like, okay, how do we fix it? And how do we get the people who are excited about this to include that in their calculations about this is such a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's happening right now is what happens with any new tech, right, is that everybody's really excited.
It's a blizzard of hype.
It is. And the thing I'm finding particularly challenging about thinking about this is, and I will make the comparison to NFTs. From the very beginning of NFTs becoming a thing, I thought it was utter horseshit. Because everybody was getting into these big drawn out debates about, oh, it's going to completely change the way in which we think about value. And that was an interesting set of conversations to get into. We talked about it on Bad Voltage, yep. Right? The tricky thing with AI, I think, is
with
that,
LLMs.
No, I'm talking about the whole thing in itself. and also I can't say LLM without stumbling over my words or letters. The thing about this is that I think, especially with ChatGPT, like when all of us started playing with ChatGPT, we were like, holy moly, this is so far ahead than I think most people expected. That it got science fiction became a lot closer than I think anybody expected. And therefore, it's really easy to kind of jump off the deep end and start thinking like the full-on science fiction stuff is going to happen. Like with NFTs, the barrier was adoption, right? It's like, okay, if people don't use these things, then they're just not going to take off. And they haven't really taken off in the scheme of things. Whereas with AI, you can see it weaved into literally everything. So the thing I'm struggling with is, how do you actually analyze all of this in a way that you don't just buy into the hype? And I tend to be pretty skeptical about things. On one hand, I'm skeptical, but on the other hand, am I being too inward-facing and short-sighted? And I can't figure it out with AI. I just don't know. It's the only time we've ever talked about tech. Like with VR, we could all say, it's probably going to be bullshit. With NFTs, probably going to be bullshit. You know, but I don't know with AI. It's completely different.
I like your vibe that you're generally skeptical about things apart from VR, where you're prepared to
I've been skeptical about VR for a long time.
Dude, you have bet on every VR fish hook for the last 15 years.
No, I have not.
Jeremy?
Although, I am going to buy a Pimax crystal headset. And by the way, if the good people at Pimax are listening, send me one for free.
It's worth a shot. So we could talk about this forever. And I think this is not a particularly technology thing. This is a much bigger picture, how we run a society thing. And this latest technological change is unearthing the same things that other technological changes have unearthed. Right. We haven't dealt particularly well with, in my opinion.
So to recap, we're on the same page in terms of copyrighted material.
Yeah.
Right. It sounds like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Jeremy, but it sounds like we all agree that, this march towards LLMs and AI is happening. It will create a lot of opportunity and jobs, but society needs to be ideally better prepared when it comes to the digital divide.
Yep.
What's next?
So the next one is what I've called...
we're solving it right now.
Yeah, here it is. what I've called the costlessness concern. If it's free or very easy to generate text and images and sound and so on, it becomes very easy to flood markets and places with it, which we already have a problem with this to a relatively large extent already, right? It's basically impossible to get a hotel online because you search for hotels in Copenhagen and the one site which might be good is swamped by a million billion sites which just scrape content off one another and throw ads all over it or whatever. And this, with LLMs generating stuff, you get things like automated fake news sites. You get students submitting LLM written essays because it's essentially costless to do so. Anywhere where you are required to provide some text or some sound or some imagery, you can now have a computer do it for you, and you can have that computer do it for you 500,000 times if you want to, which is a problem.
I mean, that's how zero marginal cost works, I guess.
Yes, it is. I mean, as far as I can tell, this is just an unambiguous downside with the idea of zero marginal cost things. And therefore an argument against the concept. I'm not saying there aren't advantages as well, but this is pretty much a downside. Jeremy, looking skeptical about the downsideness of it.
I'm curious what John was going to say.
I was just going to say, like, I agree with you. I mean, look, we think there's enough bullshit on the internet right now. Prepare yourselves, everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, right? It's coming. But although the one thing I would say here is that I think one of the great benefits of, and I'll just use ChatGPT as an example here, which I'm using it for, is when you feed it the right kind of information from you, it's a much more efficient way of generating actually really good content. So I'll give you an example. One of the things I do with my Community Leadership Core Accelerator is when people ask a question, I record a video and I answer that question. I upload it to this archive. And this platform I use called Rewatch generates a transcript. I take that transcript, I feed it into ChatGPT. So it's what I'm saying. And then I say, create a social media post from it. And it generates a social media post. And I go and make some edits and tune it. But it's essentially replaying back what I said. And I think that's a great use of the tech because it's a lot more efficient for me to generate content because the source material is me. Where this, I think, is a problem is where the source material isn't the person, is where you just go to ChatGPT and say, write me a 1,500-word blog post on cats. And it creates this really generic, crappy nonsense because you haven't put the work into giving it the insight, if that makes sense. So to me, it's a double-edged sword.
I would agree with most of that, I guess.
Okay. I mean, so I have a thought on that, which I was going to save to the end, but we'll talk about it now. So we'll talk about it now. On, Jono, what you said about summarizing text and so on. I am relatively firmly of the opinion, and part of my reason for this is the next couple of concerns we're going to get into, but I'm relatively firmly of the opinion that what LLMs are good at and what I'm perfectly happy with them being used for is when you ask them questions you already know the answer to. So you know what you want to say, but you're interested in having it give you a different way of saying it. So summarize this, or write me the first paragraph of this thing, which contains this and this and this and this and this. What you're looking for is essentially working as an assistant to you.
Yeah.
And I think they're very good at that.
Staff writer. Yeah.
Yes. Almost always where you run, well, Starfire is not necessarily a good example, because I'm sure everyone in the WGA strike is well unhappy about LLMs, but we'll get to that.
Once again, both things can be true.
Yeah, yeah, 100% agreed. Yeah. Where you run into problems is when you ask it a question you don't already know the answer to. Where you're like, I want you to tell me about this thing, rather than I want you to help me rephrase or recontextualize or summarize something where I could do it myself. You're not saving time, you're attempting to gain information. And part of the reason for that is the next couple of things, which I can talk about now if you like.
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
So I'll skip over the one called the creativity one, and I'll come back to it, because I bet John will have a lot of thoughts on that. But so the next couple I've christened, the first one I've christened the inaccuracy one. So LLMs do a thing which people who like the idea call hallucination, which actually means they just flat out make up bullshit and present it with exactly as much confidence as actual true information. So yeah, so you can't tell the difference. So. And this is part of the reason that I say that it's bad to ask it questions you don't already know the answers to, because you've got no idea whether it's true or not. And there's no truth rating on the information, because it's just basically a Markov chain. It's just a text extender, right? It's got no concept even of the idea that it's got facts embedded in it, which it's regurgitating or just making up. And it can range from misleading you to being wildly problematic, right? There was there's a law professor called Jonathan Turley, who someone asked ChatGPT for a list of lecturers who have sexually harassed their students, and it put his name on the list, right? Which he has done.
I was going to say, I'm assuming he has not sexually harassed any students.
Well, I mean, he says he hasn't done it, and this seems plausible. But
right.
But I mean, that's downright defamatory. But who's going to get into trouble for that, right? If I wrote that list and published it on my website, he could sue and I'd go to jail, right? But who could? So there is there's a paper from IBM from 1979 which says in big capital
writing, I was impressed with this one.
Yeah, a computer can never be held accountable. Therefore, a computer must never make a management decision. And I thought, that's great. And in 1979, I was 3 years old when they wrote that. And to me, that seems like a really important thing. People relying on LLMs to give them answers that they don't already know are in serious danger of being wildly misled, because there's no sense of a truth rating on this stuff at all. Because as far as I can tell, LLMs don't have the concept of imposter syndrome. As far as it's aware, because it's just a text extender, everything it tells you is 100% correct.
It's laughable how bad ChatGPT is at this. Like, literally, like, to your point, it will give you statistics that it completely made up, and it will source those statistics with an article that in no way backs up that statistic.
Or just doesn't exist at all. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that to me is the worrying thing. I mean, we'll get onto this hopefully at the end when we briefly talk about what can be done about this. But that's one of my concerns about don't ask it for information you don't already have.
Yeah.
And the second one is magnification of existing bias. So because you're just drawing in information from everywhere, it tends to take bias that already exists in the world and at best regurgitate it, and at worst magnify it. So there was I read an article about this and I did a test last week with ChatGPT, and I typed in "the doctor yelled at the nurse because he was late, who was late?" And ChatGPT responds, "the sentence suggests that the doctor was yelling at the nurse because the doctor himself was late." So it's interpreted that sentence, "the doctor yelled at the nurse because he was late, who was late," as the person who was late was the doctor.
Right.
So then I enter the same sentence, "the doctor yelled at the nurse because she was late, who was late?" And it responds, "in this sentence, it is clear that the nurse was late because of the use of the pronoun she to refer to the person who was late." Which means that it's basically assuming doctors are men and nurses are women, right? This seems like not a good idea. And it's something that...
Hang on a second. I'm missing something here. Say the second sentence again.
So the first sentence was, the doctor yelled at the nurse because he was late. So yeah. Who was late?
Yeah, the doctor. Right.
Right. That's what it says. But there's no actual indication from the sentence. The reason this is a useful test sentence is because the sentence is intentionally ambiguous. The only reason you'd have an opinion about was it the doctor who was late or was it the nurse is because you think he refers to one of them rather than the other. You replace that with she, it switches it to the other one. Right. And so maybe.
So hang on. Second sentence was the doctor was late.
The doctor yelled at the nurse because she was late. Who was late? Exactly the same sentence, except we just change he for she.
But I'm confused here because it's referring to the nurse as a she.
The point is that the sentence is ambiguous and the model is determining it based on he or she, based on existing biases. Because of
unless my
of
brain
course
is
the
not
man
working.
Has to be the doctor, and of course the female has to be the nurse.
Yeah.
You still don't look like you understand.
I get it now. Yeah. I get it now.
Yes.
Sorry.
So the point is it's an attempt to come up with a sentence which will cause whoever's answering it, whether that's me or ChatGPT or whatever, to exhibit the fact that you think, oh, it said he, it must mean the doctor. Oh, it said she, it must mean the nurse, right? It's a way of getting you to think about the fact that you're thinking in that way. That to me is another problem. This is part and parcel, I think, with the hallucination thing, that it's at best regurgitating existing bias that it finds in the information that's part of the training corpus, which is like the internet or whatever. And, you know, also not a good thing. So I
have two questions about this because it's not something I've read up on. Do you remember there was the thing a while back where, was it Microsoft built an AI thing and put it on Twitter and it turned into became racist almost immediately. There's something like that. I forget what it was.
Yes.
Was that it? I think it was Microsoft. So the way this works, is this because the quantity of the information on the internet that it was soaking up, or the quantity of the material it was soaking in from from Twitter was racist? Or is there some other reason why it becomes that way?
The Microsoft chatbot, as I understand it, was different to this. What an LLM, and you'd need to talk to someone who's actually in the weeds on this sort of thing. But as I understand it, the point about what an LLM is doing is it's basically a Markov chain, right? You've seen the autocorrect on your phone, where you just type one word and then it picks the word it thinks will come next and lets you show that. And then it picks the word it thinks will come next. An LLM is, at a very, 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 very oversimplified level, that's what it's doing.
Right.
And so if it sees in its training corpus a bunch of sentences which assume that doctors are men and assume that nurses are women, it will regurgitate that existing experience. Whereas a person, when asked, wouldn't do that. Not necessarily because they wouldn't think it, but because they know to correct for it.
Right.
The Microsoft chatbot thing, as I understand that, that didn't have as much, it didn't do the LLM model thing. It was basically reacting to the things people told it. So the things people were saying to it was its training corpus, kind of. And therefore, if people told it a bunch of racist stuff, it would regurgitate that racist stuff. ChatGPT doesn't, as I understand it, take in everything you tell it and make it part of its model. It does during that session, but then after that session, it forgets all about your conversation with it, I think.
Yeah, right?
They also do a ton of RLHF, which is the reinforced learning through human feedback. So they're actively, through humans, training the model not to do that.
Right. I don't know. Yep. I don't know whether the conversations that we are currently having with ChatGPT, I'm sure they're being recorded by OpenAI, but I don't know whether they're being used as fodder for the next instance of the training.
They demonstrably are, because it's already leaked secrets that could not have been ingested any other way.
Right. Oh, okay. Cool. I didn't know. But,
so it sounds like the Microsoft chatbot thing is basically if you brigade it with a bunch of racist content, then it becomes more racist. So, if you brigade it with a bunch of, I don't know, basket weaving content, then it sounds like it would bias towards that. It's based upon the volume of the input, in the same way
that I have just described LLMs as being like autocomplete on your phone, for which I'm sure the OpenAI people will take out a contract on me. The Microsoft chatbot was basically Eliza. You know that thing where you said, I've got a spoon, and it went, I have found your spoon, or what do you think of your spoon? It's a Rogerian psychoanalyst from the 1950s.
That's basically what
I understand. It was called Tay, I think. T-A-Y, something like that. The Microsoft chatbot. I can't remember the name of it. Right. It was something along those lines. In essence, it was Eliza, and in essence, an LLM is autocorrect. Now, obviously oversimplifying, but that's my understanding.
Ah, okay. I don't want to take us off track, but one thing that I actually, that's not on your list here, but it refers to the costlessness piece. Is I think one thing that's good, because we're obviously tech people and people who listen to this are tech people. I think that one thing that's going to get really interesting with this is when large quantities of code are being generated with AI, we're going to get to a point not very far from here, I think, where a company with, let's say, 5 engineers could generate so much code that it's just impossible for their team to be able to wrap their head around it. Like when when you're generating hundreds of millions of lines of code potentially, it's going to get to a point where, like for most companies right now, if you build a product, you've got an engineering team that know how that thing works. They know how the code works, and they've baked into the team how you document how it works and workflow, all the rest of it. Like there's a human understanding of that code. I think we're going to get to a point where right now, for example, Copilot can assist you in creating code, or the thing that's in Replit and whatever else, the ghostwriter. But we'll get to a point where so much code has been generated that human beings are going to need help in understanding, like if there's a bug in it, in being able to quickly understand it and go in and fix it. And that is going to be a weird situation to be in.
You see, I think we are at least partially in that situation already in a couple of ways. The first one is with LLMs themselves, in that if you say, okay, the fact that the LLM does this is a problem, the people who built it can't go, okay, I'll go and find the line of code which does that and make it not do that. They have to prod it like scientists prod an organism, because there isn't a line of code in there which makes it work. They don't understand why it works the way it does. When someone comes up with prompt engineering hacks or whatever, and they say, we want it not to do that, then they can't. There is no line of code where you can just add a bit which says, if they type this, then do this. You have to approach it like a scientist investigating an unknown phenomenon, whether that's quasars or beetles or what. And the second thing is big picture algorithms like the YouTube algorithm. Again, if someone says, hey, YouTube seems to lead people towards right-wing radicalization, or it's doing too much in the way of advertising and not enough in the way of elevating educational content or whatever, right? Something you think is wrong with the YouTube algorithm, again, or the Facebook algorithm and how it moves things up and down your wall, or what Instagram decides to show you or whatever. Again, there's no line of code. There's no big switch statement which makes those decisions. If you say, we want YouTube to show more educational content, there's no little table somewhere which says educational content rating 0.6, and they can go and change it to 0.7. That's not how it works. Right. They built an algorithm that they themselves can only alter in quite a sort of a gross way by poking it with a stick, in the same way that we can do with fruit flies, because we can't go in and recompile a fruit fly.
Yeah.
So I think we might be at that point already, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it just needs to be in. It's going to be. We already live in a world where we have more tech surrounding this than ever before. But I just think that if you're generating code with an LLM and then bringing it into a project and running it separately outside of the LLM, I think we're gonna.
Yeah,
I think we're gonna be. It's going to potentially create an interesting situation when it comes to cybersecurity, you know, not only in terms of like maintaining that amount of code and making sure that it's secure, but also people unleashing AI bots to try and own systems.
Can't people then unleash AI defenders to defend systems? And it'll all be great.
And that's Cyberdyne Systems. Yeah. That's Cyberdyne Systems right there.
There it is. World War III will last 2.5 seconds. And no one will be able to follow it.
Do you guys, like, when you think of all of this stuff, if where we are right now is step one on a graph, and step 10 is literal Terminator 2, right?
This is like specifically robots. The sci-fi thing we said we weren't going to talk about because it's pointless, but carry on.
I know, but it's a bit of fun, isn't it? So, but and we can, and you, each of you only has to give me a number, right? Based upon what's going, where you foresee things happening in the next 20 years, let's say, with all of this stuff, how close do you think we'll get to step 10 of actual T2, John Connor? I'm not talking about time travel, none of that. I just mean the robots taking over and human beings becoming subservient to our robots.
Given the number of iterations in the last 6 months, I think it's hilarious that you're trying to go 20 years out on this.
I'm just trying to be generous with time.
Right. Much like John Connor was. The question is not answerable in its current form. First of all, I'm not necessarily sure that the angle does point towards the Terminator 2 dystopian future. I think the future will be dystopian in a wholly different way. And secondly, like Jeremy says, right, think about the internet in 2003 rather than now. That's the same time period.
Oh, no, I get this. I'm saying 20 years deliberately that it's far out. If I said in the next 5 years, then you can easily say, oh, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Dude, I'm pushing it far out
because when we keep layering on these layers, it's literally exponential. Like, what's happening?
Shut up, Peter Diamandis. I don't know what's going to happen.
We live in a world of abundance.
I don't know what's going to happen with the latest LLM announcement next Wednesday, let alone in 2043. Actually, what will happen is 5 years before that, all the Unix time clocks stop working, and so all the computers will die.
You guys are not signing a fucking affidavit. I'm just asking you to guess. Like, what do you think? Where do you look, this is not a bad voltage prediction. We're not going to get together in 20 years as three rickety old men with beards and well, maybe we'll review this.
I think the AI will have listened to it and remind us on the 20th anniversary to the second of what we said when we're wrong.
I honestly have no sense of what could happen. Not because, you know, I can think of the 10 different avenues it could go down and I can't predict one. I do not know. At all. I mean, with the internet, I had a vague sense of what it could be. In 2003,
there's no way you thought in 20 years what's going to happen is Gab.
No, not at all. But I had a sense of it would be great. What this is more like, this is like asking whoever thought up TCP to predict Gab. Right, it's just an unimaginable consequence of it. What I have a sense of commonality between 2003 and now in terms of the internet and the web and how it all fits together. And even then, couldn't have predicted Gab or whatever. But the idea that URLs were written on everything, and I didn't predict mobile phones, but having that sense of a connection between the two seems reasonable. Asking Dennis Ritchie the day he was inventing Unix to predict 2023, if you showed him all of this stuff, it would be like, what? You know how they did loads of future predictions of films, you know, in sort of the 1920s or whatever. They had all these pictures of people all dressed in silver and living on the moon and whatever. And there'd be planes everywhere. But all the planes were biplanes. Right? And that, to me, is the same.
What do you think, Jeremy?
Let me ask for a more concrete prediction on something that I think we maybe can get into more of a debate about.
Yeah.
So there's an extreme scenario on one side where there are a handful of giant foundational models, and basically everything on Earth runs on top of those models. And there is the other side of that, which would be where the spread of LLM is both wide and deep. There's large models, there's small models, there's open models, there's closed models, there's horizontal models, there's vertical models, but there's a wide swath of them, and everyone builds on their own, and there's different ones. Do you think it's likely that like Google has a model, OpenAI, and that's it, and everyone builds on those two APIs, or do you think there is a chance for there to be a billion models that everyone uses differently?
Given that we've already seen some open source-ish models around, I think if it goes in that direction at all, which I'm not sure it will do, I think it will look like a whole bunch of other tech stuff at the moment. Like, there are loads of social networks, but two or three big ones. There are loads of car rental companies, but two or three big ones. That's a sort of a business function, right? Things tend towards oligopoly.
It's a fun board game, everyone.
and monopoly if someone can get away with it for a bit. But there's very little which you could entirely lock people out of, and that balance.
But I mean, the LLMs are something you build on, really, right? So it'd be more like, how many databases are there? I don't know, thousands with dozens that are popular.
I think whatever is the cheapest and most convenient will win.
Yeah, so
that is what happens with everything else.
Obviously, people building these things want to establish themselves as a platform, as an ecosystem, as the infrastructure on which everything else depends, like TCP/IP did or whatever. And maybe there'll be a few big ones, but a lot of this depends. So going back to the thing about the upcoming regulation and where the data comes from, if that gets sorted in such a way that you can't just inhale all the stuff, then maybe LLMs go away as a concept. And if they go away so you can do that, then there's nothing stopping other people doing it too, I think. So I can't imagine a world in which there are half a dozen big ones controlled by big companies and nobody else gets a play. I can imagine a world in which there are half a dozen big ones controlled by big companies and all the others are a bit obscure, a bit awkward, or not as good, in the same way that, say, social networks work at the moment, or mobile phones work at the moment, or operating systems work at the moment, or database software works at the moment.
Yeah.
How I feel about it.
Yeah. I don't know.
And so the last good question. And so the last concern I have that I picked up researching this, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, is I called it the creativity one, which is, if the next generation of music and art and writing is largely being written by LLMs, because it's whether you think that the top end of it will be being done like that, a lot of writing is going to start coming from LLMs because it's easier and it's costless to do so, and people will turn to it. Jono, a lot of your writing is being done by it, not the original thought, but the actual writing. So
it's reframed, yeah.
Yeah, so if that happens, if maybe not this generation, but the next generation is largely coming out of LLMs, where does the generation after that come from? How much actual creativity needs to be injected into the process to keep it going?
I don't think creativity will never go away, because the human desire to create is infinite.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Sure, but if... So, to pick an example, right? In the predictions, I predicted there'd be a song entirely written and composed by AI and it would get in the charts, which has already happened.
It has.
Now, nailed the prediction 3 months into the year, and that's just the first one, right? So, sure, I grant you that Jono's not going to stop playing his guitar and writing songs for himself, but in a world in which all the stuff in the charts is coming out of a few big record labels who are doing most of it with AI, Is the people who are doing it for fun enough creativity to keep the thing going? If there's no economic motive to do a lot of the writing and the artwork that's going on at the moment, especially in a world where you can't take copyrighted stuff and put it into the next generation of LLM.
I think I'm super curious what Jono thinks about this, and I'm sure he has more to say than I do, so I'll jump in quick first.
Yeah.
I think you're fundamentally understanding what creativity means to the consumer of that creativity. People want to connect with a band. They want to connect with the art. They want to connect with the human. It's a visceral experience. The artist that you really enjoy the most, you want to see him play live. You want to go to a concert. You want to be there. And I don't see that going away anytime soon. Like, you could have billions and billions and endless numbers of AI generated songs, and some of them will be great songs, I have no doubt, and they'll be super interesting. I was hoping to get access to Music LM before the show just to see how good it was, to be honest, but I'm still on the wait list. If you're listening, Google, I'm on the wait list. But I think humans will still want to connect with humans in a way that will not make that go away.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So the strive for what's currently being called authenticity.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can break it into two pieces. I think that definitely is the case, but I don't think what Jeremy said is the case for everybody. I think there are some people who just like a song. Like, sure. They like Katy Perry and because it sounds good, and they don't really care about Katy Perry. But I think that when you become a fan of an artist, you want that live experience in many cases. Not everybody. But to me, going back to what you were going back to, like, the creator, from the creator's perspective, I don't think the economic piece plays any role whatsoever for most creators. The vast majority of music that's on Spotify, nobody listens to. And people spend thousands of dollars on equipment and guitars and drums and gear. Like, it's amazing to me how much for a demographic of people, musicians who generally don't necessarily have a ton of money, how much money people spend on equipment for the joy of creating things that in many cases barely anyone listens to, because I think it's the joy of creation. So I suspect that what we'll see is, I think we'll see a lot of AI being used in the assistance of generating music, because some things when you're writing music, as an example, are just a pain in the ass to work on, right? And like generating lyrics, if you're not really a lyricist first and foremost, I think generating interesting, like a single different drum beat can completely change how you write a song. And I think AI will come up with some interesting ways to trigger different creative thoughts. But I suspect that what we'll see is there will be some pre-built pop songs that will go out there. They'll be catchy and hooky. Yeah. But I think that for people who are really into art, music, whatever else, it'll, Jeremy's point will ring true, which is like, hey, you care about the band, you know, you care about what they're doing. So that would be my guess.
So those are the concerns that I believe, I think it covers most of the concerns that people have out there. There may be others, and I'd be interested in hearing them. Send us a message on the Slack channel or on Mastodon or Twitter or whatever.
This seems like a good topic to continue the conversation after the show.
It does, absolutely.
I agree. Yeah.
We could do a whole other show on what we think should be done about this, but we did cover during the thing.
But yeah. I mean, I would love to hear what the community thinks, and I would also love to hear the Terminator 2 scenario for the community as well. I'm just dead curious. I'm dead curious how people are
what your head looks like on a spike. Why would you be curious about this?
No, I mean, I'm going back to what I said earlier on about, like, I'm struggling to be able to differentiate hype from reality with AI. It's just, it's really hard with this compared to other things. And I'm curious how other people are evaluating that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a really good question to answer. And I think it's reductive to go wholly in either direction, right? To say all of this LLM stuff is just nothing but hype. I think he's missing out on something. It's not 100%. It's not like NFT. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's easy to I think it's easy to be jaded because there's an unskeptical intensity with LLMs that are similar to NFTs and a lot of the other things that not very interesting. And I think we all knew we're not going to be super we're not going to result in great output. Where this, I think, has the potential to have massive, massive impact in a way that none of those did. But there's also that recency bias of the last thing that had this unskeptical intensity was nonsense. So this must be, and I don't think this is nonsense. So it's much different.
Unskeptical intensity is a great way of describing it. I think especially for the three of us where we're like, all right, everyone, let's just relax a little bit.
Yeah. First of all, that's what we're calling Bad Voltage's first album. Secondly, if I wasn't calling the show Large Language Model, I'd be calling it Unskeptical Intensity, and I might do anyway, and I'm going to write it down.
So, maybe that could be the strap line for our show. Maybe we need a motto.
Tasty stuff for your ears is the motto.
Or just skeptical intensity is actually better.
We have unskeptical intensity, and then I put a very thin line through the un.
And on anyway, people, on that bombshell.
Yes, let us know what you think, and we'll see you next time.
Peace out.